If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know, after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used. Because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.
Welcome to the latest Hawks Talk podcast. I'm Pat Boyle from NBC Sports Chicago, joined by 2010 Stanley Cup champion Adam Burrish. All right, Burr. Man, this season is it's frustrating. I know it must be. It's frustrating for us. It's frustrating for the fans. I know it's got to be frustrating for those guys. They lose to Tampa Bay on Monday night, 2-0 the final, their third consecutive loss at home, and you know they outshoot the Lightning 40-31. To me, this one came down to a lack of production on the power play, 0-6 on the man advantage.
That's the story of the year, PB. For me, it's the lack of production on the power play, and if you think about it over the course of a season, if you're 5% or 6%, 7% better on the power play, that's probably 5 or 6, 7 more wins. Now you're clearly in a playoff spot. You're not even fighting for a wild card spot. So when you're that poor on the power play and your structure is that bad, it's tough to win games in this league. And 5-on-5 in zone play, you don't score many goals. Teams defend so well. Now, defense in the D zone, 5-on-5 is ahead of the offense. Teams know how to defend better than teams haven't figured out how to break that swarming pressure is what teams call it in the D zone. So you have to either score now off the rush, broken plays, or you've got to have a great power play. And the Hawks all season, that their structure has been poor, at the very best, poor is probably a nice way to put it. When you go 0-6 against a team like Tampa, you're probably not going to win. But if you want to be positive, I thought they outplayed Tampa. I thought they created more chances. I thought they had the puck possession more. I thought they had more zone time. The couple chances and the few little turnovers that Chicago made, Tampa capitalized on them, where the Blackhawks didn't. But like you said, PB, if they bang in one of those 1 out of 6 on the power play tonight, it's probably a different ending to the game.
And don't give up the shorty, which good job by Pat Foley to pick up on the Chris Kunitz goal, the original goal. Braden Point gloves that puck ahead. If he touches it, fine, but he didn't. It was a teammate, and nobody on the ice saw it.
Cheating. It was cheating.
Yeah,
the goal shouldn't have counted, but it didn't get caught. By the officials, and you don't score on the power play and you give up a shorty, there's your game right there. The Blackhawks got back. I think they thought the puck it ended up going behind glass, behind the Chicago net off the initial shot, took a goofy bounce off the stanchion, ended up on Kunin's stick. I don't think Glass saw it. He didn't know where it was either. He was a little bit out of his crease, and he came scrambling back. It banked off of him and went in. And as a team, as a Blackhawks team, and as a player on that bench, that's pretty deflating when you know your power play struggled. You've been garbage. Now you give up a shorty on kind of a goofy bounce off the stanchion behind the net. You're like, what the heck do we got to do here? But what you got to do is you have to, the structure needs to be fixed on their power play or on their special teams in general. It's not good enough for this team.
Okay, so here's the question I have about this power play. I'm with you. The structure doesn't seem right. I don't know if we even have the right players on the right sides of the ice for their one-timers. Are we changing up the power play units too much to the point where chemistry is unable to be created? Duclair gets added, he's out there. You know, Gustafson's called up, he's out there. You know, Osterley, young guy. I mean, you know, it seems like... I get it. You're looking for anything to spark it, but you're also plugging in guys that are, you know, they're just up in the National Hockey League, you know, hoping to stick and stay, and all of a sudden they're out there trying to make it work on a power play, which obviously they just haven't, only so much time to work together. So talk me through some of the, finding structure, but yet constantly changing the units.
Yeah, I don't think it's as much. I don't think you can point the finger at that they're changing things too much. If it's not working on any team in any sport, that's when you change things. I don't think you can fault Quinville for changing his units up. If I was the coach, I think any of us would do the same thing. We're not scoring. We go for 6. We go for 10. We go for 15. What are you going to do? Just continue doing the same thing? I mean, that's stupidity. So you have to change it. I think it still falls onto where we're put situations you're putting guys in, how you're coming up the ice. I think is the main thing for me that they've struggled on is how they enter the zone, how they come up the ice. It's not dangerous. And then once you get in the zone, particularly the 5-on-3 in the Tampa game was their structure was poor. It was an easy kill for Tampa. There was nobody in dangerous shooting positions, scoring positions. It was a very amateur looking 5-on-3 setup that they threw at Tampa. But I guess you could look at personnel too, and Osterley has to be out there. He's been a dangerous shooter for the team. And in the first period, he had 3 shots on net and two block shots. He had 5 attempts in the first period. That was the most of any Blackhawks player in the first period. And you know, from the last month, he's probably been the Blackhawks' most dangerous defensive player offensively. So you've got a guy that's played, you know, 30 games this season, and he's kind of your number one D-man. Duncan Keith hasn't scored a goal. He's struggled offensively. So you have to throw somebody out there. I mean, like we've been saying for a couple of weeks now or a month, offensively from the blue line, they've gotten really nothing back there. So you've got to keep trying different guys, and hopefully somebody steps up and says, I'm the guy. Get me on the point out there. I'm going to pound one home. I'm going to make the right play. But I still think it's their structure and how they come up the ice. And then when they get in the zone, where are guys going to be? Where can you create mismatches? Where can you create odd man rushes or odd man situations to make it difficult for penalty killers? And they haven't done that.
I thought they really clamped down defensively in the second period, which was good to see after, you know, a first period, I think, where they allowed 12 shots on goal. But like, you know, the give and take, Osterley has brought some offense to this team, and he's asked to you know, play a lot of minutes because he's out there with Duncan Keith, but then he makes the costly turnover there, under 2 minutes to go, puck along the boards, he's trying to chip it out, hopefully for a forward to take it out of the zone, and he tips it right to Yanni Gord, and Gord blasts home his 15th.
Yeah, that's where you're going to get. If you're going to put a young defenseman with not a lot of experience on the ice that much and put him in a big-time role with big-time minutes with your number one defenseman in Duncan Keith, you're going to have to live with a few mistakes. And for the most part, for the last month, he's done a really good job, and he's limited his mistakes. He's played the game the right way. He's chipped in offensively, which is why he's earned himself this opportunity to be in the top D pairing. So I think it's something you just have to live with, and I think for him, as he continues to have to play in this role, I think it will get better. But a young defenseman, you're going to see a mistake like that. With 2 minutes left, he wanted to throw the puck to the middle, thinking a center iceman maybe wheeling through the middle. He thought that would be a release point for him. But you have to take a look, and you've got to understand the situation in the game. At 2 minutes left, you can't throw a blind pass to the middle of the ice. And then Duncan Keith was kind of caught in between no man's land. I think he might have screened Glass a little bit, but if you would have got a chance to see the replay, Glass put his head down. He knew that was one he would have liked to have back, but I think he lost it for a second. But again, it's the Blackhawks' young defenseman and not having a number two guy or a number one guy to really carry the scoring. So you've got a bunch of young guys that you're trying to fit in and trying to squeeze every bit of game out of them that you can. And if I'm a Hawks, if I'm sitting there, they're going to have to try and find some way to, if it's a trade, or somebody's going to have to really step up to find another defenseman that can really fill in that power play and that offensive role from the blue line.
You know, you look at Andre Vasilevsky for Tampa, he came in having allowed 4 or more goals in 5 straight starts. Okay. That's, you know, that's a sieve.
Yeah.
That's and you look at Tampa Bay, they're on their first 3-game losing skid. We know the Hawks get pretty much everybody's best effort. Yeah. So you knew they were going to come out with an edge and with something to prove. The Hawks generate 40 shots. But again, inside the dot, just like on the power play, it's perimeter.
Yeah.
Not a lot of second and third chance. I mean, there were some redirections. There were some pucks that got there. Not a lot of second and third chances from this group of forwards? What did you see from the five-on-five from the Hawks forwards?
Yeah, I the effort was there. I don't think I can criticize the effort that they weren't working to get to the inside or working to get to the net. They created opportunities. I think it's more of a credit to Tampa Bay, the way they defend. They had five guys below the dots. Anytime the puck was below the dots, they had five guys deep in there eliminating guys. And when you play against a team like that, and the Blackhawks did it, they'd try and move it out to the point and try and stretch it, but it's a Tampa Bay team that skates and is really, really quick. So their forwards were able to shrink down when the puck's below the dots, and then once it gets kicked up, boom, they close. They close on defensemen really, really fast. That's a really, really good Tampa Bay coach team playing the way they played. I said earlier, I'd be surprised if we don't see that Tampa Bay team in the Stanley Cup Finals this year. I think that's as well-rounded of a team as I've seen all year. The way they defend, the way they back pressure, and the way they can transition that fast with some dangerous opportunistic scores. Their power play is dangerous. And we didn't see Steven Stamkos' best game.
It's true.
We didn't hear his name. We didn't hear Foley or Conroy say his name maybe once all game. Kucherov he played okay. We saw him a few times, and those are their two most dangerous guys. So that tells you their depth. That tells you how good this Tampa Bay team is. So while the Blackhawks didn't cash in on any second or third opportunities, I think that's more of a credit to Tampa and the way they defend.
All right, let me quickly run down a couple guys. Give me kind of a thumbs up or not on their production and where they are in the lineup. Do you like Anthony Duclair with Taves and Saad?
For me, too early to tell. I thought tonight he created some opportunities. He had a great breakaway. He had a rebound chance in front that Vasilevskiy just was so sharp and so big and so square that he wasn't able to get a second opportunity off even. He didn't even pull the trigger on it. I thought he's a dangerous offensive player. I think the Blackhawks looking for a spark offensively. He hasn't found the net yet. I think he will. If I was Quinville, I would have given him a chance there and given that look there. And I thought he created some for those guys tonight. So I was okay with him there. I thought that was a fine move to have him up there with Saad and Taves.
We saw Q drop sharp off the Schmaltz Kane line. What did you see from Thomas Yurko? He finally gets back in the lineup after being called up now over a month ago. He was out there with Kampf and Hinostroza to start the game as the fourth line. Those three were the top line in Rockford. You could see some chemistry. Yeah,
they had some great faceoff plays, and those are things that when you play together with guys for months at a time, you can create some plays off of faceoffs. And they had some nice plays off, two scoring chances off faceoffs. I thought that line was great, and I feel bad for a guy like Tommy Wingles and Hayden, and Boma. Those three guys, they've been reliable and dependable all year. But in this business, in this hockey world, when you're a team that's struggling, you're not scoring a lot of goals, you're not getting a lot of offense, consistent play from your fourth line, it doesn't get rewarded because that doesn't win you hockey games. You need to find ways to score goals. So putting Yurko there, I thought was great. He's an offensive guy. He created chances. I think Vinny is a valuable player for this team because you can put him on that fourth line and he's going to still buzz. He's still going to fly around. And say Duclair's having an off night, you can slide him back up into that first line spot with Taves and Saad. So I like the look of that fourth line. I thought it was a creative play by the staff to make kind of a skilled fourth line. And Kampf is a big body. He can protect pucks and he can bang and crash a little bit. So you still have that as an element of physicality, but you see teams that are good now, they've kind of gone away from just that kind of crashing and banging fourth line. And if you can have a fourth line with some skill to create momentum and create some scoring chances, I thought that fourth line, other than maybe Kane's line, I thought they might have created some of the better chances for the Hawks tonight.
Coming up on the Hawks Talk podcast, Corey Crawford was in the house at the United Center on Monday night. We'll discuss that. Some possible trade rumors that are on the horizon for the Hawks and how that's affecting the guys in the room. And with two original six teams on the horizon, we'll ask Adam for his best original six story from back in the day. That's next on the Hawks Talk podcast.
Hi, guys.
I'm Tara Lipinski.
And I'm Johnny Weir.
Guess what, Johnny?
What? that Winter Olympics are right around the corner. And what does that mean?
Yay. That means we get to see Shaun White, Michaela Schifrin, and other top Team USA athletes conquer fresh snow and ice this February on NBC.
So make sure you're ready. Sign up for NBC Sports and Olympics emails by texting POD to 66866. Or you can visit nbcolympics.com/newsletters to receive the latest athlete updates, giveaways, and more.
Message and data rates may apply. Winter is here.
Welcome back to the Hawks Talk podcast. I'm Pat Boyle with 2010 Stanley Cup champion Adam Burrish. All right, Burr, what's the mindset for this team? We know there's 13 players, 25 and younger. We know there's established vets that have hoisted it the cup three times. What's the mindset to get back in this playoff mix when the teams in front of them, like, oh, say Colorado, that's won 10 straight, don't seem to lose?
I can tell you it's frustrated in there. The guys are frustrated. Their mindset is probably ticked off and angry. At some point, what do we got to do to get on a streak here? At times you feel like they're playing well and they're not getting the results. And other times they show up, like you saw against Detroit, where they're just flat all night. And they're wondering what's going on or what do we have to do? Because knowing these guys, they care and they're passionate. You don't win 3 Stanley Cups without having some kind of fire and drive and motivation behind you. So are they ticked off? Heck yeah, they're ticked off. But, you and I talked about it in the pregame before Tampa, and I shared a story on a team I was on where it was we went and we said, let's have 7-game segments, 7-game series, and let's try and win each 7-game series. And you have to win 4 to win the Stanley Cup, so we had 4. And we ended up winning all 4 of those series, and we were on a hot roll, and then we stopped it with about 20 games left, thinking we were on this roll, and we ended up missing the playoffs. So it was almost like we should have continued this. Because I can tell you from an athlete's mindset, it's you need to have goals along the way. Otherwise, an 82-game season can get long and stale. So you have to have little goals, and guys like Patrick Kane, they may be chasing points, or Jonathan Toews, they wanted the scores. They always have these little goals, or they're chasing guys in the league. That's their motivation. A third or fourth line guy may say, I want to have a great plus minus this month. I want to be great on the penalty kill. I don't want to be out there for a goal when I'm out there on a penalty kill. So you set goals for yourself. And I think as a team, sometimes when you have little small goals when you're struggling, that can seem to get you out of some funks. So if you were to ask me if I was in that dressing room, I'd try and encourage guys to set some small-term goals.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. Kane talked about it after the Islander game that sometimes it can get overwhelming when you hear someone say, well, you got to win 2/3 of your remaining games and you're 4 teams you need to leap. Hey, put it in segments, break it down maybe in week increments.
Yep.
Hey, we've got to do this before the All-Star break. Let's do this on this road trip. But the other reality is, this team doesn't usually stand pat. And I've heard through a couple of sources that Stan Bowman actively searching for defensemen. And not just one, but multiple defensemen. Yeah. But then again, who doesn't want top 4 D-men? Yeah. So take me into the locker room and, players know what's going on. Yeah. They know when the team is looking for help, and they know that they're probably going to have to give up an asset to get one back. Does that make it for a difficult time? Are you able to block it out? How do you deal with it from a player standpoint?
I don't think it I guess I would say there's usually group. You can put guys in groups in a locker room. There's a group of guys that they're just happy to be in the NHL, right? They're going every day trying to survive and trying to work as hard as they can to be there. If they get traded, fine. I'm going to be traded to another NHL team, and I got to approach my day-to-day like that, just trying to stay in the league and work as hard as I can. There's a group of guys that would be devastated if they got traded, and they don't want to be traded at all. There's a group of guys that knows they're kind of untouchable, so they're not concerned about it. And then there's a group of guys that's a bit uneasy. They know, if your name is in that group, and guys read stuff in the media and people bring it up to them and like us talking about it. And so there's a group of guys that's a little nervous and knows their name is thrown out there as trade bait. But I would say in the majority for a team, you don't really care. You don't really notice it. You're focused on, practice today and doing great in practice or doing your thing in the gym or a game day. You're focused on your game day thing. So, in general, it doesn't affect the team a lot. And I would, with those rumors, I would certainly say if there's a weak spot on this Hawks team, it really is their defense. They've struggled there all year. I think they've got a lot of young and experienced guys. And then you've got some of your veteran guys that haven't put the points up like they have in the past. So If you are looking for something, I would say that that's what the Hawks need is they need a defenseman, a puck moving defenseman, that, you know, maybe a QB on the power play, someone that can contribute from the back end. So I think it's a fair assessment that, or what you're hearing from people and what people are saying. I think it's certainly accurate.
It'd also be nice to see Corey Crawford back in the crease. On our pregame show on NBC Sports Chicago, we had the first public video of Corey Crawford since he, you know, went on the shelf before Christmas break. From your vantage point, look, we don't know a lot. We know upper body. We've heard the rumors, vertigo, post-concussion. From your vantage point, everything you do know about, you know, seeing players back around the team, that's usually a good sign that at least you're making some progress, and then maybe, you know, next step, get back on the ice. Maybe we're looking at 10 days, 2 weeks, but what did you take away from just seeing Corey back at the United Center?
Yeah, well, so, you know, speaking of from guys that have gotten concussions that I've played with, if you're in a bad place and you have the vertigo and you're not feeling well and things just aren't going well from a concussion side, you don't go to the rink. You stay home. I've played with guys that the light even bothers them, you know, and so you stay home, you keep your lights off, you eat what you can, you're sick, sometimes guys are puking, so you stay away from the rink because it's not a comfortable place to be, and if you can't train, you can't do rehab, you can't skate, heck, you can't take a sauna or a hot tub even, you just stay home, and you don't come to the rink until you're capable of doing something. I mean, the rink isn't a place where you're just hanging out, and a lot of coaches, they don't, if you can't do anything, they don't want you there because you're in the way, or you know, you're laying on the training table. Let the guys get treatment that need training table. Let the guys eat that need to eat. And the guys that are injured are sitting there eating all the food while they're on the ice. And so once you go to the rink, it means that you're moving in the right direction and that there's something that you can get out of being at the rink. And so to see Corey Crawford walk in today would certainly suggest that he's doing something during the game today. He's probably in the locker room and maybe he's getting some kind of treatment. Maybe he's just getting back in the rhythm of it and watching a hockey game again and keeping your mind active. So I think certainly that, like you said, PB, when you're coming to the rink and you're seeing guys that have been away for a while for a mysterious reason, once you see his face at the rink, that means he's on a path to come back at some point, you'd think.
All right, time now to finish up the Hawks Talk podcast with a story time with Burr, and by the way, did a great job in Mark Lazarus's book. I'm not a big time reader, but I've gotten through most of it, and there's a lot of great stories in there. With Toronto and Detroit on the horizon this week before the NHL All-Star break, two original six teams. Do you have like a fond original six story that you remember that you can recall and share with us?
Yeah, one that comes to mind, probably one of my favorites. My rookie year in the NHL. It was my first game against the Detroit Red Wings, and you know when I was growing up, that's when they were winning all their. They were like the Blackhawks of now, winning Stanley Cups every year. And so one of the players I always liked was Darren McCarty. He had these cool tattoos. He was kind of a bad dude, fighting people, beating people up. He had no teeth. He looked like a hockey player. You know, he was in a rock and roll band, I think.
Yeah, he was.
So I just thought he was cool. He was like what a hockey player, NHL hockey player, should be. And so my first game against him. We weren't very good that year, and in the first period, I think 5 minutes into the game or 7 minutes in, we scored a goal. We had a lead for once, and so we were at home, so they threw out their grind line. What was it? McCarty,
Draper, and Malpe.
And so Savard throws our, you know, kind of low-budget grind line out there with me on it, and as I'm jumping over the board, Savard goes, "Hey, Burr, no fighting, you hear me?" And I kind of, yeah, Savvy, I got you. And he grabs my jersey, and he's like, "Burr, no fighting, you got it?" And I go, yeah, I got it, Savvy, you know, because we scored a goal. We had some momentum. He didn't want me to get the crap beat out of me by McCarty probably and lose all the momentum. So I said, yeah. So I line up next to Darren McCarty, and he looks over at me, and I kind of look up at him, and he goes, "How you doing, kid?" And I go, "Good." And he goes, "You interested in fighting tonight?" And I go, "Darren," I said, "I've looked up to you for a long time. I love the way you play. I'd love to fight you. But Savard just told me no fighting right now, and I'm trying to stick around here as long as I can. So I can't." He goes, "I got you, kid. No problem. Maybe later on." I go, "Yeah." I go, "Hey, would you sign me a stick after the game?" And he kind of looked at me and nodded. He goes, "Yeah, no problem, kid." And so we went on to the game. We never fought. The situation never came. I think we lost the game, and I'm sitting in my stall after the game, and one of our trainers, I think Troy Parchman or maybe it was Clint, came over and said, "Did you ask for a stick from Darren McCarty?" And at that time, I didn't know how long I was going to be in the NHL, so I was collecting sticks from guys. So any cool player that I liked, I'd ask him on the ice for a hockey stick signed. And he goes, "Well, here's a stick from Darren McCarty." And I was like, "No way." And I was kind of embarrassed, but I looked at it and I read it, and it said, "To Adam, best of luck the rest of your career. Keep grinding. We'll fight again soon."
Nice. But never fought it down, you know, after that?
No, never fought him, never did. Probably thankfully. He would have knocked all my teeth out.
Good stuff. She'll always have McCarty's stick. All right, yeah. Great stuff, Adam. Thanks for joining us on this week's Hawks Talk podcast. We'll catch you Wednesday and Thursday on NBC Sports Chicago as we have pre and post before the Toronto game and those hated Detroit Red Wings on Thursday.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15 discount not applicable to partner operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.